I'm now going to be introducing a short talk given by Dr. Shahab Peleg, who is a group leader of metabolism and epigenetics and aging at the FBN Institute at Dummensdorf, Germany. His lab uses behavioral experiments in mice and flies with biochemical approaches to see how metabolic alterations contribute to aging. And his talk title today is Light as a Partial Energy Replacement to Increase Lifespan. So over to you, Shahab.
Thank you very much. So welcome, everybody. Today, I'm going to talk to you about some project that I feel very passionate about, which is revolving about light as a partial energy replacement to increase longevity. I changed a bit the beginning of my talk because I came across this really nice perspective in Nature Aging. It came out less a week ago. And basically, I cherry-picked, I recommend you to really read it. I cherry-picked a couple of interesting topics from this perspective. First of all, they say that there is a limit to maximum lifespan in human, that you cannot increase it more than the maximum as it is, which is around 120. And they also refer to current interventions, popular interventions, such as diet intervention or some popular drugs, metformin and so on. And they say that this intervention that we currently use can probably only improve median or health lifespan, but there is no evidence they can improve the maximum. And I actually feel kind of agreeing to this statement to some extent. And they also conclude, and maybe it's a good time to put this laser pointer, they also conclude that all the current scientific evidence that we have, we cannot really break the biological limit of human lifespan at the moment. So it's basically impossible. And something very interesting about that if this is true, that implies that all the participants of this beautiful VitaDAO event, so none of the participants will be around to live in around 105 years from this time point. And this is without any exceptions. And that is unless we find some meaningful ways to intervene with lifespan. And the authors do give a hint how it could be potentially achieved. And they say, if we really want to aim to radical life extension, we need to have some sort of a radical alteration of fundamental aspects of a human biology. And this is exactly the direction that we are interested, to take something a bit risky and out of the box. So I want to point something very basic. Evolution designed a lot of the human body to basically get food, rather by behavior or by all this elaborate system inside of us that process the foods and also get rid of the waste. And when you look at all this incredible investment of evolution, it's obviously very important to grab the food to generate energy. And when the food is being processed, for instance, to some smaller molecules such as glucose, evolution also invented a very elaborate biochemical mechanism to utilize the energy that is stored within these molecules and translate into eventually ATP, which is the currency, metabolic currency of life. And it all boils down to this glycolysis, for instance, and TCA cycle, and it further goes to this electron transport chain, or the ETC. And this is as conserve goes for eukaryotes. So you have the ETC here, and basically it uses some of the precursors that are used to generate in the glycolysis and the TCA cycle to basically, inside the mitochondria, move protons from one end of the membrane to another side of the membrane, and therefore created some sort of a gradient of protons. And when you create enough a gradient of protons, what it does, those protons finds the way back through ATP synthase to generate ATP. And this is very conserved. It's very essential. It has to work all the time. So you think if you get cyanide poisoning, where you block your oxygen in complex four, you die. If you drown and you don't have any access to oxygen, you also die. So this is very essential. And still essential and conserved, we wanted to know, or we thought, like, what is the rationale to target it or even replace it? So the target maybe will be more straightforward, because a lot of research already suggests that targeting the mitochondria, and especially this electron transport chain, result in extended lifespan. But I was more thinking about replacing it. So, and this is also very important because we know now that this process is actually downregulated or a bit dysregulated in aging. So it's less active and it has been shown as a major driving force of aging. So another way to look into that is to look, if you summarize what's going on here, is that if you take nutrients and use oxygen to so-called burn these nutrients inside in the mitochondria, you generate the energy. The problem with that is probably, and you can look at this metaphor, that if you take a power plant that is used, I think this is very relevant nowadays, to generate energy. So if you take coal and oxygen and you burn it, you indeed get the energy in form of electricity, which is very needed to heat our homes and so on. The problem is when you do that, there is a lot of pollution or byproducts of this reaction. And I think the same applies to the mitochondria. The more energy you produce throughout your life, it can generate some sort of byproduct damage, which is, for instance, ROS or AGEs or probably other type of related damage that we are still not fully characterized. So how about looking at this metaphor, how can we produce cleaner energy? And, you know, it's very hot nowadays, the solar energy to use harvest light and create electricity. And I wanted to do the same with the mitochondria. So I wanted to use a tool that allow us to build this very important or synthesize very important ATP via the mitochondria, but instead of doing it only with nutrients, doing it more cleaner with lights. So here it is again, the ETC and the ATP synthesis in the mitochondria. And here, when I was thinking about doing it, came another group of Andrew Wojtowicz, which pioneered this tool, spearheaded by his PhD at the time, Brandon Berry. And what they did is they inserted a proton pump from a fungi. And this proton pump is very special. So it can use the energy of light using a cofactor called all-trans retinal. And when the light hits this proton pump, it can basically channel or translate this energy to pump proton across the mitochondria. And if you use light, you activate it. And what you basically generate here is an alternative radical way to generate energy in eukaryotes, which has not existed in evolution before. And this is a very great idea because you basically can replace the ATC by this tool, which is called MitoOn. So this group showed, and I'm going very briefly about this Embo Reports paper, they show basically that if you use this MitoOn in worms, you can basically see here that if you just have a normal worm, or you have a worm without actually the cofactor ATR, so the MitoOn is not activated, you cannot generate ATP. But miraculously, even if you don't use any precursors to really to activate the ETC, you can still generate ATP only using light. So essentially, this worm can eat light and generate ATP. It's quite incredible. And even when you have a mitochondria, which is fully operated with the right substrates, using the activated MitoOn can generate the ATP, but using less oxygen, which is great. So this is where I come in. And I was thinking, great tool, let's use it on aging. So let's see if really we can extend lifespan in worms. So we have these four groups without the light, where nothing is activated, with and without the ATR. And here we have the light. Without the ATR, we don't have activation, and only with the ATR and the light, we have activation. And indeed, as the hypothesis went here, so if you look here at worms' lifespan, you can appreciate that all the conditions show a very similar lifespan. However, when you activate the MitoOn and you have clean solar power energy, so to speak, you have a significant lifespan increase, including a maximum lifespan increase. Now, the great thing is, they don't only live longer, they also live healthier. And this is a problem sometimes because often or many times when you extend lifespan, it comes on the expense of fitness, for instance. But here, as you can appreciate, you can basically see that those worms are also more active throughout aging. So this is great. They live longer and they live healthier. Another thing we are working on is light optimization. So here we have a certain amount of light you can read in the bioarchive. If we reduce the lights below a certain threshold, then this beneficial use of MitoOn is no longer there. So we don't see the lifespan anymore increase, which put a really important target, like how much light amount we really need to use. And this is something we are still working on. And another thing is two things that I want to show you. If you compare here the black line, which is the N2, this is wild type worms, and this green line, which is inactivated mito-on, you can see they're very similar lifespan, which is very important because it put it in the context that the mito-on itself is not toxic, which is something reviewer number three mentioned. And the interesting here, again, you can have the lifespan increase upon mito-on activation, but if you use FCCP, which is uncoupler, which allow the proton to go freely throughout the membrane of the mitochondria, you lose all this effect. So this is really pointing how important it is to keep this proton gradient intact. And the last thing I'm going to show about the worms is we also try to figure if the mito-on technology can be used with other known ways to extend lifespan. And indeed, if you look at worms which have activated AMPK, it's one of a very popular model to increase lifespan, you can see that the AMPK and the mito-on, when they are combined, you can have a very important increase synergistic effect of lifespan in worms, suggesting maybe it's a novel mechanism altogether. So this is in summary, if you put light on the worm, you have a lifespan expectancy increase and health span. The last slide of data I want to show, when I was in the ARDD in Denmark, a lot of people came to me after my talk and asked, well, great about worms, but is there any evidence it can ever work on human and mice? And the answer is yes. This is a paper that was published last year. And you can see both in HeLa cells and in T cells from mice, you can express the mito-on. It is targeted to the inside the mitochondria. And it does what it's supposed to be doing. So once you activate it using the right amount of light, you can have an increase of ATP in both in human cells and both in T cells in mice. So it can work in mammals. This is definitely the way we are passionate about going forward, and see, we have a couple of ideas how to use it in human and so on. Yeah, so this technology is still very young. There are some challenges. I just want to share, not everything is bright, so to speak. So it will be a gene therapy at the moment. And there's a question how to deliver it. We have some ideas about that. Also, there is light accessibility. So it's obvious we can use it on whatever is coming in contact with the light, but what about liver and heart and so on? Here we have a very crazy idea we're pursuing in the moment. I hope in 1 to 2 years, I can share more data about that. Toxicity assessment, it's possible if you use too much light, it produces too much ATP, which might be bad. And it's likely if we look forward and we want to increase lifespan meaningfully in human using this technology, it will be a chronic treatment. So you will have throughout your life to be exposed to the right amount of light, probably sleep with a light blanket in the night to charge your body with energy. Yeah, and with that, I want to thank everyone in my lab. Especially, I want to thank the collaborator, Andrew Wojcevic, and Brendan Berry, that really allowed me to join to this beautiful journey. And yeah, I'm happy to take questions now or after, and thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you, Shahab. That was such a super cool talk. So while I wait for some questions from the audience, I'll just mention one myself. So with the mito-on approach, have you done any RNA sequencing analyses to see, like, you've increased ATP in the worms and the cells? Like, what is the ATP being used for? Have you looked at any pathway analysis?
Yeah, I think it's a very good question. We didn't do the RNA-seq. Basically, it's waiting to be done. We did do some proteomic analysis, at least in day 1 and 4. And surprisingly, we didn't find almost any differences in the proteome level at this age. We are now going to look a bit ahead in aging. But I think the point is, at least in our hypothesis of aging, is this is an energy replacement, not a boosting concept. So we don't expect to actually increase ATP. It's just how the body generate the ATP in a cleaner way. So we expect to see similar levels of ATP, but this is data-free observation. So we are going to do some metabolomics on these worms.
Cool. And then the second question was how you genetically modified. Was it overexpression, or did you integrate it into the nucleus, or was it in the mitochondria DNA?
Yeah, sorry for not explaining it. So at least in the worms, it just incorporated in the DNA via CRISPR. And that's as simple as that. We are looking now at other organisms where we are looking to express it in different levels.
Awesome. Great. If there's any other questions, would you be able to stay around just to answer them in the chat? Otherwise, I will pass it back to Max to introduce our next speaker. But thank you very much for that talk, Shahav.
Thank you for inviting me.